Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have me a very special guest, Nick Snape. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much, Daniel. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. I believe I found you first on TikTok. Now my account's been frozen. Hopefully, comes back soon. But it was really cool, to find so many people like yourself on there, and then to I got quite a few of you guys that I actually found on there over the last couple of years that I've been able to interview. So it's been kind of nice getting through the ranks, so to speak. So thank you so much for coming on today. And, we'll talk about, some of your writing books and just have some fun on a Friday. So thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. Oh, looking forward to this.
So we'll actually start right in there, Nick, with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
It's well, my it's quite a varied one, to be honest with you. If you like everybody, I suppose. I mean, I started very probably in my 20s when I wrote my first book, so a good 30 odd years ago. That sits somewhere under a bed, somewhere very long, long, far away, potentially maybe even in the bin. But that was probably my first dip into actual writing. And since then, I've had quite a long career teaching, and ended up as a principal, work for special needs children as well, and lots of different varieties of things. So really, I think my writing started in that. I always used to love to tell stories, particularly with children and working off children and making them up, and working to, if you like, develop imagination, thought, and particularly with the youngest children, developing their reading skills. So, writing and reading's always been part of my life. So it, from there, it's kept going and going and going. Then we hit the fun time of COVID, which here in the UK was quite interesting for schools. We were left a lot to our own devices in terms of development, and during that time, as a principal or a head teacher, you were, taking care of your children as well as your staff, the families, all that type of stuff. So reading became a huge release at that point, for me. And during that time, it was that first inkling of, is this what I want to go and do? Do I want to keep going or maybe take that turn, and try something different? So it was I did a lot of space opera at that time, a lot of the type of reading where you could just lose yourself in something, a long series, a lot of Evan Curry, a bit of Asian Tchaikovsky as well at that time. And you got yourself lost in those books. So that's where I really started thinking, is this what I want to do? Took early retirement, not with the intention of writing, but to try and go and do something else. And then one new year, just looked at it and thought, actually, let's give this a go. Let's give one book a try. And I think that's really, so what's 55, 56, so 36 years in teaching, and ended up taking a big right turn. Let's try something new. And I think that's probably, it was that point when my journey really started. But obviously, your first book is a one of those things that you have a go at and then begin to realize it's much harder than you ever thought.
Fair.
But luckily, I have a lot of friends who enjoy their sci-fi and everything else, so I bounced off them, worked very hard on it. One book led to a two, led to three, and that's really where the journey started. And obviously, the Weapons of Choice series developed out of all of that, and was something that I really enjoyed putting together. But you can actually see in the series the development of characters, story arc, that type of stuff.
That's excellent. I'm hoping for early retirement myself. I love the job, but sometimes, man, like there's just, you know how it is. It's like, and now I feel like the paperwork's gotten longer.
It's
There's a couple
just never
things I'm
stops.
like, yeah, I'm like, if I could just spend time with kids all day, like I would totally do that. But like, I feel like that's only like half the job now. And I'm only 37 and I've already been working in public schools in some capacity for 18 years. So next year it'll be half my life. And I'm just like, it's just crazy to think of how much things have changed. Kids are always the same, in my opinion. But the other things, it's the other things I don't like sometimes. So it's like I'm like, I can't wait to get my novellas published this year. And my friend was just asking me, you consider early retirement? I said, I need at least 2 years, even if I blow up, because here they'll take care of my student loans in New York State. So I was like, he goes, oh, we got you for 2 more years after this spring. I go, yeah, that's for sure. Like either way, because then my loans will be taken care of. So yeah, I definitely understand that. But I just think that's interesting. You mentioned that escapism, so I totally understand that. And it's just so funny, like with the TV show The Flash, like we have on the CW, it's like 9 seasons and stuff. But it's like has that they did such a good job, I think, like portraying the event that led to Barry Allen's powers and these other villains and stuff. And I think it's so funny. I was talking to a buddy a while back, and he goes, I think that's like the pandemic for a lot of authors. And he goes, it's so funny to see where people were thinking about writing or were writing or whatever, but then that really seemed to be like the event, right? That stimulated so many people to, whether you, like you said, they want to escape or just, want to try something new and, take that right turn into writing. But it's really kind of cool. It sucked, right? But it was kind of cool that, there's so many people like, you and me that decided like this was going to be the event that we decide to take and then, learn from and then and do this thing that we wanted to do or that we enjoy. So I just think that's really cool, to see so many authors share that as our creation event of our superpowers, if you will. So I think that's really neat. But in terms of like genre, like what genre or genres are you currently writing and why? And I know you kind of peeked into, some new stuff there recently. So I'm just curious for our audience, what genre or genres are you currently writing and why?
So, well, currently, right, so it's quite strange. So I basically started off with, if you like, military sci-fi, military action type sci-fi, which was the weapons of choice. When that story arc finished, and obviously my first journey into writing, I really wanted to try experimenting with something new. And it's from there that I had a go at writing, if you like, science fiction thriller or mystery thrillers. And the reason for that was I wanted to try different. I wanted to try first person point of view. I wanted to try unreliable narrators. I wanted to have a go at interweaving stories that didn't require the action part of it to tell the story, which obviously within military sci-fi is very, very important. And yes, it's still there, but actually the story is woven in a different way. So I just wanted to give something else to try. Obviously, what you don't realize is, as a new author, an independent author, is you just don't take your audience with you at times. And so, though I love writing them, and I think actually in terms of the quality of writing, there's I've had a the reviews have been very, very good. What you realize as you're doing it is actually that there's more to just a written book. By the end of it, you've got a different audience to appease that goes alongside of that. So that's been an important learning curve for me. And that fiction has an element of cli-fi to it, elements of climate fiction within it, because basically I built it around what may happen in the future. So the
Oh,
actual background to the story is in that. And then I moved from there and had a go at some dark fantasy, which is probably where my roots are as I've grown up in my original reading. I used to love Michael Moorcock's work, so the Elric books and Core and people like that. Which is quite a sci-fi fantasy type feel to them.
yeah.
They've always been like a part of my life as I've grown up and learned what I really enjoy to read, and then led on to science fiction from there. So it's I wanted to try different genres, different approaches. So I've got three at this point in time, and then I've just started the last book, which I've just written the first draft of, is what you would call not military sci-fi. It's a step back, but it's more of an action orientated, but it weaves in what I've learned from the other genres. There's a
Oh,
bit
cool.
more of political subplot. There's a bit more depth to what's going on in the background. That's not saying that my military sci-fi isn't deeper. It is. But it's human deep. It's about the people. Whereas with these books, there's something, there's layers in there that you might say would be layers that you take from fantasy or layers you take from a sci-fi thriller, where you've got to bring out what's actually going on in the background, and it's a passage of discovery for the reader as well as as well as the main characters.
It is interesting. I was just talking to my friend. I actually bought him Mickey 7, like Edward Ashton's Mickey 7. And I do think it's interesting, right? Where, like you were saying, right? There's some of those political things that are going on, are more global or wider scale, and they just seem to have different machinations and different things that go on. And I did read a couple of fantasies recently that were more that way. And my friend, he always talks about Dune. He likes where he feels it's kind of hits both spheres, really well in terms of interpersonal, but also those. And I'm like, yeah, he was like, I never really considered that. But he's like, I think Star Wars, he's like, is very similar, because you have, that blend. But I do think it's interesting to see more and more people, particularly with the indie sphere, kind of going these different routes. Like, I would say I'm more of like a, I love Daredevil, Spider-Man, like that kind of thing. I love those kind of guys, like, and those kind of stories. So my D&D guys are like your grunts, I guess. They're your military sci-fi grunts. They're in there, just duking it out, and they're not really doing anything super crazy, until maybe later, maybe a few books in or something. But they're just just everyday people, just getting into trouble, which I think is what everybody loves, about Joe Abercrombie, and these people. But I do think it's interesting to then see, like James Corey, with like the Expanse and stuff, and to see some of those, those wider political issues. I had a Keith McWalters on, and he had a really interesting idea if people never died all of a sudden, and what did we do? And it had a lot of blend between like those old school, like interpersonal connections, but also had like that wider range of what's going on in the world with those geopolitical issues in terms of sci-fi. So, but I just think it's interesting how so many people are, doing caveats and doing them really strongly or doing a blend. And I don't know, it's cool to see the different flavors. I think that's why indie in particular, and I think traditional publishing for myself, I think has gotten more exciting, because they've realized that people like myself, we really want those different, those flavors, and to different degrees at times. So I think it's always interesting to see how people, how they kind of sit for people. So that's why I got my friend Mickey Seven. I was like, I think he likes this kind of, these little caveats and these blends, but that's really cool. So one of my favorite questions is to ask people, and I know, we got a couple of genres here to talk about, for books for you. But I love talking to people specifically about their books. So we're going to start with your Weapons of Choice series. So what is that series about, and how did you come up with this idea?
What's it about? There's a good, it's a good starting point. I think it's probably what you just talked about. You've got an it's the human element that I wanted within the books themselves. That's how I started in my own mind. I wanted those main characters in the books to be fallible, to be not heroes as such, not your superheroes, if you like. But they learn the processes that get them to the point where they have the technology that you would see them as superheroes by the end of it, because what they can do and what they can achieve. And it was those two things I wanted to put together with that first idea of the main characters are actually two, if they're like reservists, but they're trainers within the reserves. And then there's an actual trainee who's trainee reservist ends up as part of that group. So they're thrust into a situation. That first book is basically 24 hours. It's from the day they go out to there's a if you're an alien incursion where they're training. They're training with not like without live ammo, and they're thrust into a situation where actually there's a world event going on. We're in the middle of it. Everyone knows about it, and their commanding officer is taken, and they're on the hunt to try and get them back. And it's really just that drop and go feel to it. I just want it to be as exciting as it possibly could as an introduction, but give you enough of those characters that you want to know more about them. So not, as well as, the events that they end up, because the book finishes with them finding something, which then leads into the rest of the series, which they don't have a choice about. And so they're thrust into that situation as ordinary people in an extraordinary situation. And I think I grew up, on the Buck Rogers and the Flash Gordon black and white serials and all those things. So the other thing I wanted was them to be episodic, so that the books really cut to that event that happened at the end. But then there would be a story arc that would carry on. And I think that they grow with that. So those events develop through the books, which is why I ended up with so many in the end in the series. It's an 8-book series, but the ninth book is really 2 books in one. But I couldn't get it together so that it would fit nicely in terms of wordage. I ended up having to put them together to make it work properly. So it's really that human element, and then it grew. So when we say what was the original idea, it expanded. So my one side of A4 story arc became 2, 3. I'm a pantser, so I tend to write as I go, and the characters lead me. And that's a lot of what I learned with the writing the Weapons of Choice, is that these characters were really exciting, interesting people, and they took you into places that you wanted to go. The other thing I found out is that you can't kill them off when you get to that point. No one's allowed to die according to your readers. So I ended up having to, when I got to my sixth and seventh book, I ended up having to clone them and do all the horrible things to my clones rather than to the characters themselves. But there you go. But yeah, I mean, that's where it came from. And originally, it came from just a simple picture of a soldier in a forest. That's where the idea came from originally, that someone showed me. I don't know, even know when. And it just grew and grew and grew from there.
That's cool. I have to say that Hostile Contact, I bought several of them. I'm like super behind from last year. Small child. So I'm actually doing pretty well this year though. So you're in my I have 52. So Hostile Contact, I'm trying to get onto my list from this year, but I'm still from last year. So I'm actually doing pretty well though. So Hostile Contact is actually in my possibly last 8 of 60 for the year. So I'm actually, I think, going to be done this weekend with like number 10. So I'm actually doing pretty well, knock on wood. And I've been slammed with work. So I'm like doing pretty well. I might get through like 3 next week. So, but I have a separate video for Hostile Contact and the other 7 books that I'm actually filming actually this upcoming week. So it's the 8 books that I'm trying to get to by the end of the year to get on to my actual, which have been 2020. Well, I guess now it's like 2024 reading list. So I'm getting slowly caught up, people. I had some review stuff that people just randomly were like, they knew I was busy. They're like, well, I just want your opinion at some point. So I'm trying to get through those. But I have to say, I absolutely love the blurb. When I first, that's what drew me into your TikTok though, was I think the first time I had seen your TikTok, I actually have the books right here. I think it was maybe book 2, and I was like, oh, that looks really cool. But then when I saw it, and then I remember specifically there Hostile Contact popped up for me in another one of your TikTok videos. So I was like, wait, like, what is this? And I don't know what it was about the green, the black, or the two of them standing in there, in the forest, with these other shapes and and people and stuff. But I was just like, I gotta check this out. So when I looked at the blurb, I thought, oh, this is definitely like my kind of military sci-fi. So I bought them.
Oh, it's very kind of you.
I'm really bad. I buy stuff and then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get to it later. My wife's like, so you gotta stop. So now I'm actually on Kindle Unlimited. So it's helped me a little bit save some money. But yeah, I'm definitely excited to get to that one and to get into the series. But I'm just curious, as somebody who's writing a veteran, I'm writing, that's what's been I've been struggling with, is like dark fantasy. I can write that stuff all day. For me, it's been hard. I have a urban fantasy. I have a marine, and he's like literally it's prequel novellas. So in my actual series, he's gonna be a monster hunter, but it's about my prequel novella series, like how he becomes a monster hunter. And I find that I have a hard time writing the military part. Like the other part is actually pretty easy, but the military part for me is really difficult. So I'm curious, like, what are maybe some tips or tricks that you found? I know it's a little different, in terms of genres, but I'm just curious that. Maybe some things that you found were helpful for the military aspect, in terms of writing your military sci-fi. Because I know a lot of people that struggle with that.
It's interesting. I think Number one, I pick UK military. So if I do get anything wrong, 90% of my readers are obviously US, Canadian, Australian. So I don't get so much feedback if anything is slightly off within
That's fair. My character is switching, Nick, today. Fix the book.
that so that was one kid. Actually, what happened really was that you write that, you put that down. But then you go with those people that you know, either have been in within the military or got some aspect of it. And they helped me adapt to that. And then from there, within the first couple of months, I got a couple of people getting in contact with me saying, this isn't quite right. And that's the power of doing something electronically in terms of the Kindle and things, because I didn't publish the actual physical books to begin with. So I got quite a bit of feedback. A lot of it positive in terms of how I approach things. But also on top of that, some advice in terms of when certain things would happen. I remember I popped in, there was a salute I popped in there, and they basically said, ain't gonna happen. Just won't happen there. And it was nice to get that, just a simple thing that can knock somebody who is a veteran out, which they don't want. So it was nice just to get those tweaks of feedback. But the rest of it was probably, I got a lot off the UK Army site, and things like that in terms of direction, and then obviously the people that I knew. But it's not easy. But once I set up how the squad would work together, then you stick to that. So as long as the, from my point of view, as long as I was consistent, the rest fed in. And that's what, once I got the structure, once I got a little bit of advice from other people, made a few tweaks, and as it fell into book two, book three, it became better from that point of view. But yeah, there's always interesting things that people feed you back as you're going along. And it's some of the language as well. Most, I think 95% of the language in terms of the interaction was right. But there was somebody who came back and said, oh no, we wouldn't say it like that, just to just know. And you've got the scope to do it. Now it's an audiobook. I haven't got the scope to do it. Once it's set, it's set. So
Oh,
but
that's
yeah.
cool.
But that's generally, so it's hard to give you advice other than pick somebody from a different country, no one can argue.
But I think it's great advice. So I was looking for so long. I was looking at military sci-fi. I was trying to find veteran military sci-fi authors, and I was trying to find, somebody that would that was knew enough, about writing in the genre, but also like wasn't big enough to, be like, oh, now I don't have time. So my friend J.R. Wise, thank you, J.R. He is He's gonna help me out. He's been helping me out, and I'll ask him on Instagram. This poor guy's about to get flooded, because I'm at a point where I just have to finish. I just have to finish my field draft, and especially the military part, like some of the military stuff. I'm just gonna word vomit. I was trying not to word vomit him, but he's like, I'll give you a straight feedback. So this poor guy's gonna get so much word vomit. So I know I have a lot to tweak between five and six, but it was nice to find somebody, who. Has that experience as a Marine, and I can say, hey, would they go? I do it all the time. I'll say, hey, like, how would they do this? Or what type of equipment would they use? Like that kind of thing. So I definitely think, if you can find somebody, it took me a while. It took me almost 2 years to find somebody. I was in veterans groups, like all over the place. Like if it was Marine hashtag, I was there. I was telling people, I was like, I'll pay you. I will give you free books. I'll name you a character in the book. Like, what do you want? But yeah, it's definitely not the easiest thing, but I definitely agree with you. If somebody can, someone's willing to give you that feedback, you could change something. I definitely, in the future, I don't have as many Marine things, because he's going to be an ex-Marine. He's going to be a veteran. Well, I guess that's one thing Jared told me: once a Marine, always a Marine. So that's different. But yeah, I had my character saying he was a warrior, and he's like, no, he's a Marine, and he's like, it's a thing. He's like, we don't say it. We don't say soldier. He's like, we're not a soldier, we're a Marine. So I was like, oh, so just that alone, really elevated my friend Daniel Green. Helped me out, Logan D. Irons, and that was one thing he said. He's like, yeah, these guys, they would not say they're soldiers, like they're Marines. So I changed that right off the bat. So I think that it was really good advice. But I agree, anytime someone knows more than you, I definitely would listen. But that's awesome. I'm looking really forward to that, because I was on a lot of military sci-fi last year, and then I've kind of tweaked away because I had other people that asked me to read their sci-fis, and they're a little different. So I'm kind of anxious to get back to the military sci-fi. So, like I said, I look forward to the Hostile Contact. And you said Hostile Contact, or the series is on Audible then, or audiobook?
The first five.
Oh,
So
perfect.
basically, yeah. So not all of them, unfortunately, at this point, but six, seven, eight are not on there at the moment. But yeah, the first five are on.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
They're on all platforms.
Oh, perfect. I was gonna say, because that helps me out, because I'll do 50% Kindle usually, like something like that. I get like I'll do it when I can, and then I'll do Kindle. It's just easier with my son, if we're doing something. He's walking and stuff, but he still gets tired and wants to be carried, so it's a little easier sometimes.
And Josh Innes, who's my narrator,
Oh,
very
nice.
good, really, really good.
Oh, awesome. Well,
So,
I look
and
forward to
obviously,
that.
and he had to take on, I had a Scottish accent in there, and a Scottish Tanzanian accent that he had to actually think about and do as well.
Oh,
So,
wow.
I put him through the mill.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I look forward to listening to the audiobook as well. That's super cool. Yeah, I also, I don't know. I tend to just love the combo now. I did it out of necessity before, but now I tend to actually really enjoy it. So, which is good for you guys, because I end up buying twice as many products, and I actually get through, and I can actually, physically, like, read them and get to listen to the audio. And I actually have gotten used to, and talk to quite a few narrators too in the process. So it's cool. I always learn something new. So I'm really curious about your scorching sci-fi thriller books. I didn't know you had those, Nick. I don't know why those weren't popping up for me on TikTok algorithm. So that's so interesting. So
Yeah, they're very different, and I think that's probably why. So, in terms of how they present, like I said, it was something I wanted to do slightly differently. I wanted to make a not these aren't really a right term, but they're nearly. But they have got, if you like, the first book certainly has has an action military bent to it, but certainly not the second. So these were, I mean, these evolved from conversations I had with a friend who. Basically, we talked about how we would model where the climate would be in the future if we just carried on as we are. That was just where the concept came from. And how would it be fixed, from that point of view, if we needed to fix it? And the more we looked at that in terms of a concept, it was actually, this is a good place that we could run a sci-fi book. It would be an interesting type of approach. And the other thing I wanted to do, strange as it sounds, is I wanted to do a buddy cop type of thing, but between a human and, in this case, it's a robot octopus. Just something off the wall, yeah. Just to see what would happen if I did this type of thing. So if you think about the relationship that we have with our machines, with the things that we have, can you take that a step further? Where would it be in 30, 40 years? Would you have your own? Why would you have that? And it was very off the wall. I don't know why I went there, and I started writing it, and then it worked, and then you keep going. And so the first one is very much like a vlog style. So it's basically a narrator
Oh,
that
cool.
you are watching. So you're watching the scene, and then you get comments along the way about what's happening or how those things are happening. So it's a very twist on the normal genre, breaks the fourth wall. And what I found is that you get people who really get into that. It takes them 15, 20 pages. And if they give it the time, then they've loved the book. But it's getting past that first section. You've got to tune in to what's going on and how it presents. For me, I learned a lot about first person point of view and how to present it. I learned a lot about how to layer a story, because this is quite a tricksy. It goes a little bit back and forth. The narrator hides things from you. You don't know about all his emotions, how he feels about what's going on. So it's quite a different approach to writing a book. And for me, it's been those people who've read it have really engaged with it, or completely the opposite. It's they've gone, nah, it's just not for me. It's been quite a different feeling for that. But above all else, it's still got that human element. I still wanted that interaction. So in reality, what you've got is a human and a robot, where the robot is actually the conscience. Is actually trying to calm down the situation, trying to make things a bit more how to react to things. Quite a deep book in that way, but also Now there's still all the action and things that go with it. So it's quite an interesting concept. I don't know why I went there, but I needed to do something different. And it works, but it's not, you know, obviously it's not the military sci-fi side of things. But once I'd built that world, and you had that concept of it, I wanted to then play with it again, because I'm interested in also trying out the mystery side of thrillers, and trying to write a story with hints, which obviously you don't tend to get in military sci-fi. You might get some, you know, it's bludgeon is the wrong word, but you do tend to get hit over the head with events. And I wanted something more subtle to play with. So in the Scorching Book, the second one, The World in My Hands, the idea was that, yes, the Earth was in trouble. My aliens have arrived to say, yeah, we're going to help you out. But just in case we don't, we're going to build these colony ships for you and send some of you off. And it's basically those people who are in those colony ships are the richest or the lottery winners. There's no other. There isn't space for everyone else. So that's the premise, is that you've got these people on the on these ships built for them by aliens, and they're going off to find a new world, to start again while Earth's being repaired. And then it's the evolving story that happens on there. And really it's just twisting it round about, you know, trust. These are the people that have just said, just, you know, because they have their status, they've been chosen to go ahead. They're not spacefarers. They're not people who know how to survive on that ship. They are just people thrust together in a, where everything is just about done for them, and they've got to get through their day-to-day lives, for, you know, for an innumerable number of years. And it's putting those people in that situation. And then you've got a murder, maybe, or a suicide, that goes on one ship, something that happens on the other, which is very similar but a different style. And then it's weaving those two stories in and out, for the reader. So the idea basically being that the reader learns what's going on, whereas the main characters have only got half their story. So you've got, so basically what you're doing is you learn as the reader everything that's going on from the human side of it and the alien side of it and the ship side of it, whereas the main character is in the dark, and it's how they react to different situations, or the two main characters. So I've got a 40-year-old personal assistant, and I've got an 18-year-old rich kid, disaffected, and those are what weaves in and out during it as well. So it was, for me, it was just interesting to actually play two characters who were very different from each other off in similar situations, and how they would react to it. And obviously they were going to react in what's relevant to them. So it is very different, from that point of view. Yeah, but it works. The reviews have been superb. But again, it's the readers. So I've got the readers who read the Weapons of Choice. Will they like this? They would if they give it a go. But it's a different genre, and it's not, mainly if it's not their genre, not everyone likes stepping out from it. But it's, you know, I love writing them, and they've really helped me see writing from a different point of view, being able to write as a person and the full emotions that go with it. And it's really fed into the new action military sci-fi that I started writing.
Oh, cool.
That's a lot more leveled and nuanced. The action's still there, thick and fast. But I've been able to use what I've learned from that with more depth to it as well.
That's awesome. I think that is important though. You know, that you said, you're like, I don't know why, you know, I had to do this thing, but you know, or write this, but I do think that's really important. I think that's me with urban fantasy. Like, I love sci-fi, I love fantasy, and more like sci-fi fantasy, I guess, is more what I was writing before. And but now, like, at one point I was like, I want to do like a military sci-fi, but like a mech warrior thing almost. And you know, and just like, I love Pacific Rim, so I don't really have anything that big, you know, in terms of the suits, but I always loved, oh, there was a show, like a cartoon. It didn't even run for that long in the United States, but it was like, I think it was like called EXO, and they had like these exoskeleton suits, and they were toys, and it was really cool. And I don't know, that always stuck with me. And before my son was born, my wife's like, you're gonna do what in 10 days? I was like, I had this idea and I went through and it was like 11 days before my son's due date. And I was like, I'm gonna write this whole book. And we were on vacation. I guess we were on vacation and we weren't going to see my parents because my son's due date was like right around after Christmas. So we didn't want to be traveling, you know, and be at a random hospital or something. I didn't want to, you know, deliver the baby in the back seat of the car or something. So we stayed here and I literally, that's all I did for 10 days. My wife was tired and she would sleep. And I think I just looked recently. I think I have like 48,000 words out of like maybe 1,000 for 100,000 for this thing. But it was like, I'm gonna go back to it at some point. You know, I actually started writing that before my urban fantasy, but it was weird from, you know, so many perspectives. But I did learn a lot of different things from, you know, the outlining. I learned a ton about screwing up an outline, and then discovery writing and trying to blend, and I'm a lot better at doing the blending of the two now. But yeah, it was interesting. Like the things that I learned just from starting that project, even and getting like halfway through. I don't know. I don't know if I can explain, you know, how I've used those, you know, lessons in a lot of different ways for my urban fantasy. And then coming up, I was stuck with book one for my urban fantasy, and I was like, well, I'm gonna do these prequel novellas. But doing that random project for 10 days helped me figure out how to fully outline and plot and figure out the direction of my actual book one for my urban fantasy. And I'm like super excited in the summer, like once I get my other two done out of my prequel trilogy, is I have book one ready to go. Like I know exactly what's going to happen and it's going to be really cool. But like if I hadn't have just done that random project that I just had to do at that time, I don't think, you know, the pieces would have fallen together. I would have learned the lessons I had to learn to come back to that project. So I do think at times it's like the Connect Four game, you know, or like stuff just kind of slides in, you know what I mean, at a certain time. But if you're not doing stuff, nothing happens, you know? And at that time I just had to write that thing. So I don't know, when you were saying that, I really feel that. And I learned a lot from that process, even though it's, you know, totally a different genre, but learned a lot about characters and voice and stuff at that time too. So I could definitely understand that. It's ticking me off though, because I remember the book now, because I did put it on, I put both of them, because your dark fantasy book one came out at the same time. I put both of them on my website. So I can't believe that TikTok and nothing like sent them back to me in the algorithm. So I just want to point out to you and our audience, I am your audience, Nick, particularly for that book. But I can't believe after everything I do in the algorithm, it just goes to show you, right, that the algorithm is really hard to get in sometimes and that your audience is still out there, but maybe they're having trouble finding you. And we're friends on every social media platform, you know, for the most part. Like it's kind of drives me nuts, you know. So it's crazy that if we're sharing stuff like that, you know, back and forth, and you know, it's nuts that I haven't seen that book in a long time, you know. So it's crazy to think about, you know. You can do feels like we're both swimming, you know, trying to get to the same location and tidal waves coming through or something. It's very strange.
It's interesting. I mean, basically, you've got something, and I've had this discussion recently on people's social media about how that approach. And what you can't do is expect to take the readers with you when you've got a specific thing. Now, obviously, if I pitch the books as action books, then I've got a slide in. But then I wrote the second one, which is more of the mystery thriller. So, to me, that they are very important because they've helped me develop. I'm not someone that cannot finish something. So because I wrote it, even if it was, you know, the worst thing in the world in terms of me, I would still go back and back and back until it was, you know, something I could put into a book. And it's just my nature, I think. And that's probably from education, isn't it? It's you can't let the children down. You have to keep going, however hard it may be. And I think that's me in terms of when I start a project. I haven't got this. Don't take this in the wrong way. I haven't got an unfinished project. I can't not. I've got stuff that's finished and I won't publish, but I can't leave it. You know, at that point, it just won't sit with me. I don't know why. But I've certainly got stuff I wouldn't publish. Tucked away somewhere.
The trunk gets pretty big after a while, right? It's kind of nice to have OneDrive now. You can just put it in there and not have to like walk by it and hear it talking to you. Yeah, I definitely understand that. That's really funny. It's funny because I was talking to Kelly McCullough a couple years ago. It was like my second season about his Fallen Blade series, and the book one was his trunk novel, and he just couldn't figure out how to get it to work. And then he did Webmage, did that series, and they're like, "Oh, we want like a dark fantasy, something unique." And then he took that old trunk novel out, and put it in there and tweaked it, and then that became book one. And I love book one in particular. It's like it was such a unique thing. So I always tell people, like, you never know when that idea is gonna come back to fruition. Now, I have to say, Nick, I have three that they have not talked to me. But it's probably good that they just stay that way. But you never know, right? Maybe a character or something pops up later on, and something. But it's
Well,
funny.
even there, if you hadn't written them, you wouldn't be where you are
True.
now in terms of
Yep.
writing. So it did,
Yep.
they all have a benefit along the way.
Yep.
It's part of that learning process. I think it's just how it is. And for all those, someone out there will want to read them. So eventually you will go back.
Yeah. No, it's totally
The one
true.
on The one from my 20s under a bed somewhere, not so much. That's going to stay there, forgotten.
Oh, God. I actually just found one the other day, and I was just like, I was groaning. It was a couple weeks ago. My wife's like, "What's wrong?" And I go, "Just found this old file emailed to myself." She goes, "Oh, like blah, blah, blah." I was like, "Nope, it's good in the email." It's like, I'll save it. But I said, nobody needs to know anything about it right now. But I want to make sure I don't run it out run down on time a little bit, but I definitely want to make sure we have enough time to talk about your Warriors of Spirit and Bone books. I was so happy when you had sent me book one, to put on my website and stuff for updates for people. I was like, oh, that's really cool because, I didn't know you were doing that at that time. So I thought that was cool, that you had a couple things, come out at the same time in different genres, or subgenres. So I'm just curious that, what these books are about and, where those kind of ideas came from because they sound really cool.
Yeah, well, fantasy. I think you mentioned is no, fantasy's always been part of my life in terms of the things I've done. I used to, you mentioned D&D. I used to run, we would call it Games Master type lead stuff for everything from Stormbringer to some of the White Wolf games, Cthulhu, that type of stuff. Probably this type of thing where I didn't use the, I never used preset scenarios. I would always make this stuff up as I went along, feed off characters. And obviously, Michael Moorcock is one of my heroes in terms of writing and the stuff he did. So it was going to happen at some point. It was always going to happen. But what I found was that the complexity of a fantasy was very different from the sci-fi. And I think it's been an interesting learning curve going along. So I've actually just had book one re-edited, not for any changes in terms of the structure of the book. But in terms of how to get across the background story to the world building, so I've made an alteration within that, and again, it doesn't change the content, the dialogue, but it just gives a more succinct understanding of the world that it's in, because it's easy once you've got it, because it doesn't change throughout the book. It's just a concept, but it's getting that concept across. So basically, it's a dark fantasy. It edges into dark fantasy horror, because my main bad guys are soul-eating immortal. You call them vampires. I don't think I'd quite go that way, but they're artificers, so they build things. So they build, in
Cool.
particular, a dragon, which are mechanical, and possess them. They're possessed with souls, the twisted evil souls that go and hunt for other ones for them to feed off. That's the concept around the story, as mad as it sounds. So I've got a huge mechanical dragons in the books. So the concept really is that if you imagine a decadent society that has everything it wants, and has basically bred the humans to have the type of soul magic that they feed off. Those humans escape. And then we are 1,000 years later with where those people have gone to, and they're in hiding. Whereas the society's broken down because their food has disappeared to the bad guys, they've got to go hunting for it. And that's where you're at in terms of the story. You leap forward to 1,000 years, And what's basically happened to the people that have escaped is that they're in hiding. So to hide, they cover their world with a veil, and that veil is formed of the soul magic that they drain from their own people. Complex, isn't it? And that's where it gets. So basically, what you're having is a world that's shrouded. That shroud comes from the people, but they've basically built a religion around it, and faded out the past. So the people don't know about their past. They just, because after 1,000 years of being told the same thing by the religion, by the in terms of what's going on, that's all gone. It's forgotten and hidden. And the seven houses, the seven religions, hide that deliberately because of the fear that it would cause, overhanging you all the time, knowing that at some point someone's going to potentially appear and they're going to want to start feeding off you again. And so the world is based on that. And then you've got, and then this is a little bit that's, if you like, conceptually comes from Hostile Contact, in terms of something breaks that, something enters that world. People suddenly realize magic is true, and is real again. And it's all that interaction between the church and the 1,000 years of lies, and the crown, who begin to realize they've been played and tricked. And you begin to actually dig underneath what's really happened, and the types of things, you know, some of the really terrible things that the houses have done to hide what's going on. Meanwhile, in the background of that, you've got the people who are the soul eaters, who will actually suddenly realize that the veil has been broken, that they where these people are, and that's where they're going to go next. So you've got then got the development of a world that's having to prepare for war, that's going to have to emerge from the lies that they've got, that they've been telling, to eventually feed the people who live there, whilst this thing's going to happen, while these soul eaters are going to arrive again. And it's how you do that, how you seek that out, how you make that happen. So it's quite a, it's it sounds complex, but actually, once you've got the original concept, it works logically through the books. And you've got the action levels that you've got within the military sci-fi. You've got the nuanced stuff that you've got from the other books. You've got layers of political intrigue. You've got layers of what's going on in terms of the ordinary people that are thrust into the situation. And then you've got my big, huge dragons of the veil, which are the mechanical dragons, who actually have got their own personalities that you begin to realize are potential to be turned. And you end up in a situation where some of them turn to the protective side of things. They're rescued from their own situation. So that's what happens over three books. It's about 400,000 words long. The third book is written, A Queen in Blood. That will be coming out, I'm hoping, in April. And it's basically a structural thing where you've got the, if you like, the really fast-paced stuff that happened in Hostile Contact. The first book is really fast-paced. The second book really talks about the development of what's going on with the in terms of the development of the preparing for battle, looking for protection. And the third book is the actual ease into the overall
Oh, cool.
world-spanning battle that goes on afterwards. So it's, but into this, obviously, you've got the Soul Eaters, who are artificers. So you've got the dragons, who are mech. You've got mechanical scorpions. You've got very large centipedes. You've got ornithopters, so flying dragonflies. You've got all that side of it, and then you've got just these people who've got a couple of swords and a bit of magic that they're fighting against. So it's how you survive all of
Well, that sounds amazing.
that.
Definitely my kind of
Hopefully, I've
thing.
not
So,
confused you in all of that. And this is
yeah,
why,
I was thinking
yeah,
like
I
a
think
couple things
once
you
you've
said. I was
got
like, it sounds like well, the things I like of. Oh, sorry, I cut out there for a minute. I was saying it sounds like a couple of things you said. With the complexity, that's what I like about. And I think a lot of people personally, I think like about like the Stormlight Archives, because you get a lot of that in there too. We're just kind of sifting through with the people themselves at this time what happened like previously, and I don't know. I'm really enjoying the complexity of it. So to me, that sounds like really interesting. So.
It's, and this is the thing, is it sounds complex when you explain it. The idea of the books are is that it's not it's drip fed through. And what I found was the feedback coming back was that there isn't enough drip feed. So that's why I've had a little bit of re-editing. I've put a bit about the houses and how they want people to live at the beginning, called the seven tenets that they must follow. And once you've got that concept, the rest will come easier. So it's just an addition to improve how that book works. I mean, obviously, the reviews have been very good. Even the couple that have said, you know, there's a little bit of understanding development. You need to take time over it. So I've had a couple of the, you know, SF Insiders and FanFi Addict have had really good reviews for them. But at the same time, has said, you know, there's a bit of clarity that maybe needs working on. And I think that's why I've gone with this and made that adjustment. And actually, you know, reading through it does work. It's much, even with a simple tweak, it's made a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's smart though that you listen to the feedback. My developmental editor, I thought I was a little further along, and she's like, no, you know, like, not to be mean or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm like paying you to, you know, give me the truth. And she's like, I think that you need to take some more time. She goes, you might need like at least two more drafts, if not 2.5. So that's where I'm like shooting for 6.5. So I'm about to be doing my fifth one next week. So, but I'm like, she knows more than me, and this is the first thing I'm publishing. It's a little smaller, so like people ask me like, why you go novels? I'm like, they're smaller, they're a little cheaper, you know, and helps me to learn, you know, a lot of things, a lot quicker, I think, with releasing three, particularly like launches and stuff. But yeah, it's I tell people like when I had Logan D. Irons, H.L. Tinsley were my two alpha readers, when they were like, yeah, like I like these things. All three people said the same thing when development editor also the same issues. And then I was like, I assume that J.R. Wise would say similar things. But it's nice when they're all saying the same thing, you know. But I'm like, well, I tend to listen to people that know more than me, and they've all published far more than me, and a lot better too. So I think it's smart that, you know, that you listen to feedback. So that's awesome. I just want to make sure we have enough time here for our last question. That, you know, we make sure everybody knows everything that, you know, you have going on currently. But for that last one, do you have any news, updates, current projects, anything like that that you can share with us?
So, like I said, the third book, the last book in the Dark Fantasy is coming out hopefully in April. That'll be A Queen in Blood. Really looking forward to that. It's got an amazing cover, absolutely superb cover for that one. Which will be, you know, that'll be a really looking forward to that one coming out. Currently, I'm writing the new action sci-fi, which is called The Wrecking Squad.
Oh, awesome.
And that's an action, action military sci-fi type concept. That's actually by the time this goes out, that will be out, and
Oh,
hopefully the
excellent.
second book will be out for that as well. And that is, no, it's in development now, but it's coming along. I've just started rereading through one of the draft, and actually it's working so well. It's really interconnected. It's the characters are developing very quickly. You've got to cross the concept, and the more I read it, I mean, I was pitching for, if you like, Aliens meets Expanse meets Firefly.
Oh,
That was the
nice.
pitch in my head.
Awesome.
I got within, you know, the first 12 chapters, which I'd been through this morning again, and that's exactly where it's heading. You can feel the first two, you can feel the expanse, and you can fit with the intrigue and the political machinations going on in behind. You've got the Firefly in terms of the relationship between the people and what's going on in their lives in the background. And also on top of that, I know, you know, we've got the alien interference, we've got the action that's coming up that's part of it as well. It's going to be really, really good. It's just one of those things. So when you know, and everything just comes together. And when you talked about how fast you wrote your other one, I mean, written this, you know, it's come along so quickly. It's just felt flowed as we've gone. So I'm really excited about that. So that's The Wrecking Squad. And then the second one will be called Butcher's Folly. So there should be two out by the time this goes.
Oh, awesome.
I'm also obviously planning for that. I'm going to do a reader magnet. So I'm going to do a short story, probably about 10,000 words, which will be the origin of the Wrecking Squad when they
Oh,
were
cool.
originally Marines at the beginning, before they became what they are now. I won't give any more hints than that. That I'm excited to write as well, because that will be just pure military sci-fi. It'll be 10,000 words of a full-on action battle scene, and then how things got flipped for them will come at the end of that. So that'll be interesting to get done. And then the other things I've got a couple of short stories. So I'm hoping to do take part in an anthology with a few people that I'm in a Discord with. Some authors who have got their own works out, all in sci-fi. So it'd be nice to try and get those done and actually do something like that, which would be quite excited about that. So something I've ever done before. I've never ever written a short story before. So to put two together, I'm hoping we can get that together by the end of the year. That'd be good.
Cool. I was gonna say I love I've had two anthologies on here so far, so just throw it out to you guys if you guys want to. I could save you a slot or add one for season five. By the fall I'll be done. Season four mid-October. So I'm actually this summer we'll be filming season five, probably most of it honestly, for like really kind of like the whole first 6 months of the next school year for me, the next season. So if you guys want, if you'll be, if you do that and you guys want to come on or whatever, sub if you ever or get everybody on, just want to throw that out to you guys. I love having co-authors and anthology people on because it's just a it's a totally different take and blend. I mean, I learned a lot more. I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people, they still have asking me about anthologies or different anthologies and how people do things. So it was so interesting to have like H.L. Tinsley and a couple people on from theirs. And then I'm supposed to have another one pretty soon, I believe, if I think they're wrecking their stories. They're going through their word counts pretty well. So I'm hoping that I can get them on. I can't say too much about that one, but I'm hoping to have them on soon. But yeah, if you guys want to do that at some point, you just let me know and we'll save a slot for it because that sounds really awesome. But I just want to remind our audience you can find all of Nick's links, book and social, down below in the description, anywhere where you're watching or listening to this podcast. So please make sure you check out his products. That's going to be our main focus of this podcast always. It's really hard to be seen and heard, especially right now with current social media and everything that's going on just in the world in general. So definitely help people out as best you can. Speaking of help, reviews help the most. Like I said, I have Nick's Hostile Contact. I got the Kindle. At some point, I'm gonna have to get some physical copies. I just love that first cover in particular. I love the other ones, but that one is, I don't know what it is. It's just, it hit me like just right. It's one of my favorite in the genre, just in sci-fi in general. Currently in particular. Yeah, I have I'm excited about the audiobook. So I always make sure that I review on Amazon, Goodreads, and I just copy my Amazon for the Kindle, and I'll copy it right into audio, and then I'll add something about the narrator or how the work was done. So just want to remind people to do that because that's the best thing that helps everybody, including Nick and everybody else, that works with our authors or creative. So please, please, please make sure you're reviewing those products. That's actually the number one thing, really, that will help people the most. Nick, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great. I'm so glad the people I talked to for a while, on social media and stuff, I'm just always glad, when we can, sit down and, actually chat, face to face, so to speak, at least this way. But if there's anything, like I said, that, you need in the meantime, you got a lot going on, send me whatever and I'll put all the updates everywhere where I can. And I have a whole system now. So I tell people all the time, you need something, let me know. It only takes a few minutes and helps me out to, to try and help other people out as best we can and try and keep the community going. But if there's anything I can do at all for you, between now and when things come out, you just let me know and we'll do that to the best of our ability. But I really appreciate you coming out and I look forward to getting the Hostile Contact. I might have to bump it up in my list. Don't tell anybody because I already published my list for the year. I have the videos actually coming out this weekend for it. So, just so you know, I will send you the list of my, I don't know what I'm going to call it. I want to call it like the Super 8 or something. I don't know. But I do have Hostile Contact in there. It's actually my first one. So when I can film that, when my kid goes to daycare next week, I'll actually send you that link. So that way people can, check that out and hopefully we'll get the series out there and stuff a little bit more for you. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on today. Need anything else? You just let me know, my friend.
Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Hopefully we'll see you soon. But other than that, I will talk to you on social media, I'm sure, really soon, my friend. But other than that, hope you have a good rest of the day, okay?
Okay.
You later.
Thank you.
Yep, bye.